You've all heard that story, I'm sure, of the fellow who decided he wanted to become part of a monastic community, and he went and applied and was told that if you do this, you must take a vow of silence, and you're only allowed to say two words once a year. And so he thought he could do it, and at the end of the first year, he was called in, and they said, "What are your two words?" And he said, "Bad food." And so he went back and for the next year maintained his vow of silence and was asked again at the end of the next year, "What are your two words?" And he said, "Hard bed." And went on at the end of the third year, they asked him what his two words were, and he said, "I quit." And the man in charge said, "I'm not surprised. All you've done is complain ever since you've been here." We're going to talk about complaining tonight. Last week we talked about raising the bar in several areas of our Christian walk. You know, I'm convinced that most Christians here do a pretty good job overcoming some of the bigger sins. But where Satan tries to get us is in some of the finer areas. And I know many a wonderful Christian who is tempted by Satan in this area of a critical spirit. I know many a saint that's been a faithful child of God for years who still has a complaining nature about them. So we're trying to do some fine-tuning and challenge each other to raise the bar. And these are usually areas that we're all a little bit guilty of. I know I am. And in this area of complaining, I'll plead guilty tonight. The critical spirit that we talked about last week is an attitude that's usually directed towards individuals. Complaining is usually directed at life at large or to circumstances. And you know, we do. We complain about almost everything if given a chance. We'll complain if it's too hot. We'll complain if it's too cold. We'll complain if the weather is dry or if there's too much rain. We complain about high prices and low morals. We complain about politics. We complain about traffic. We complain about other people's children. And the list just goes on and on and on. Open your Bibles, if you will, to the passage that was read at the beginning, Philippians chapter 2. Here in Philippians chapter 2, Paul writes to the church in Philippi, and he is giving them some very specific instruction on Christian living. And he starts out in chapter 2 challenging them to imitate Christ. And there is that beautiful passage that describes the nature of Jesus who took on our nature, gave up the nature of God, and humbled himself and became obedient. And then Paul says to those Christians in Philippi in verse 12, "Therefore, in light of Christ's example, therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose." And then the very first thing he asked them to do in obedience to him out of respect for him is this. Verse 14, "Do everything without complaining or arguing." Now he writes to this church and he gets them on the hook and he says, "Will you be obedient to me as you always have been?" And you can imagine when this letter was read that they all nodded, "Yes, we will be obedient to anything the Apostle Paul asks of us." And then he says, "I want you to stop complaining." He says, not only stop complaining, he says, "I want you to do everything without complaining." Now, I don't know about you, but that is a pretty tall order where I live. I found myself thinking, I'm glad he wrote that letter to the Philippians and not to the Americans. Complaining can be a habit-forming way to go about life. There are folks, and you know some of them, you may be one of them, who derive immense satisfaction from grumbling about every woe and problem that is imaginable. And sometimes I'll have to admit I feel better after I have gone through a lengthy bout of complaining, and I call it venting. And I think it's healthy emotionally to do that. But according to Paul, it's not healthy. We should not be people who are given to complaining. Well, what's wrong with it? Well, at its root, it is symptomatic of an ungrateful heart. That's what's wrong with it. We read in the book of Exodus, in fact, all the way through the Old Testament, the story of the Israelites. If you want to read about a people who complained and who grumbled and who griped, they were the poster child for grumbling and complaining. In Exodus chapter 16, after God had graciously spared them when he visited the plagues upon all the Egyptian households, he preserved them miraculously. He brought them out, and with his mighty hand, he opened up the sea, and they crossed on dry land. He brought them to safety in the land, and no sooner were they across on the safe side of the Red Sea than they began to complain. And there in Exodus 16, it says that they raised their voice as if they were one and said, "If only we had died in Egypt. There we had all the food we wanted." So God rained down manna from heaven and fed those hungry people. And no sooner had he fed them, in the very next chapter, in Exodus 17, verse 3, it says, "But the people were thirsty, and they grumbled against Moses, 'Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to die of thirst?'" Grown-up people who sound very much like children. I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. And it turns into not just a complaint, but into a blame. And they blame Moses and the God that Moses serves in their complaints. So you see, complaining really is a reflection of God's provision in our life. That went on for almost 40 years. And God sent them on another lap around the wilderness, and they complained, and God said, "Take another lap." And around they'd go another time. They'd come back in, still complaining. And so again and again, they went around and around there in the wilderness until finally that whole complaining, belly-aching generation had died off and been buried there in the wilderness. You know, it's almost funny to read those stories about the way they complained and complained and complained. But God was not amused. It was an insult to his watch care. It was ingratitude in its highest form. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul there goes back and traces out some of the history of Israel. And he says very plainly, he says, "I'm writing this as an example and reminding you of these things as an example." And he says, "God was not pleased with them." And then he goes on and begins to list the sins that Israel was guilty of during that wilderness wandering. He said they were guilty of idolatry. They sang and danced, rose up to play, and talks about all of that. He talks about their sexual immorality. And then he mentions the third sin there in 1 Corinthians 10. And you know what the third sin was? They were grumblers. They were complainers. Now, that helps us see things, perhaps from God's perspective, when you see those three sins with which God was not pleased, and the three sins are idolatry, sexual immorality, and grumbling. That puts grumbling in some pretty bad company. You know, we look back and think, how in the world could those ingrates have done what they did? They were surrounded by miracles. I mean, they saw manna from heaven. They saw water come out of rocks. They were saved miraculously from their enemies in that battle where Moses held his arms up. And God just saved them again and again and again in amazing ways. And how could they ever complain when God was leading them? When they could look out in the morning and see a pillar of cloud, and by night that pillar of fire, and they had all this evidence of God's care for them. But you know, I wonder if we could bring two or three of them in a time machine right up here in our day, and if they could follow a few of us around just for a week, and if they could see what we see, and I wonder if they would then say to us, you mean you have seen the full end of all of this? You know about the Messiah, and you've come to understand what God's ultimate plan was from the beginning, and you're now on this side of the cross, and you've seen His grace and His mercy, and you can go to the grocery store, and the variety, all we had was manna. And look at all the things. You can live in a climate-controlled environment. You can travel anywhere in machines that fly and cars that go. And you complain? And I think they would just be amazed that we would have anything to complain about. In James chapter 5 and verse 9, James is very straight. He says, don't complain or grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. Complaining and grumbling is insulting to God. It's a slap in the face of God. Complaining and grumbling reflect poorly on our Christian walk. What do people who are not Christians think when they know someone who belongs to God who does nothing but grumble and gripe and complain? Did you know that complaining turns people off? It does. I don't like to be around people who complain all the time, and you don't either. And yet you know people that are like that. I would much rather be around someone who never complains. And I'll tell you, I think that's one of the greatest compliments that I ever hear offered about anyone. When someone says, you know, you never hear that person complain. And I'm going to embarrass her by doing this, but I'm going to tell you somebody right here in this church who's had some real health struggles, and yet I have heard more than two or three people even say this about her. And that's Paula Christian. You never hear her complain. No, it turns people off, and it is absolutely un-Christ-like when we complain. Look at what Jesus went through. Jesus, when He was reviled, He blessed. When He was sinned against, He forgave. When people were ungrateful, He served them anyway. When people were slow to understand, He was patient. And when the one who would betray Him sat there that last night, He got down on His knees and He washed His feet. But Jesus never complained. He had incredible control not only over His actions, but over His attitude. Well, what do we do? I mean, I will be the first to say I am guilty of complaining about silly things. I'll complain about my sinuses when we have friends who are dying of cancer. I mean, I'll complain about little things when others are dealing with major life issues. You know, it's important that we respond in a way that allows our actions to take the lead. Let me explain to you what I mean. Turn in your Bibles for just a moment over to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, the first two verses. In this section, Paul is talking about attitude adjustments. He's talking about renewing your mind, making changes in the way you look at life. And this is what he says, therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Now he tells these folks to do two things. He's talking about your mind, your attitude being changed, and he's talking about presenting your body. Which comes first? Here in the text, which comes first? It's your body, isn't it? He says you present your body first, and then you renew your mind. And I believe that there's an importance in that order. What you do with your body has an effect on the way that you think. Remember what God said to Cain back in Genesis chapter 4? Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry?" He's dealing with an emotion. "And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up?" You see, the way we act in our bodies determines the way we think and the way we feel. Did you know you can act yourself out of complaining? You really can. You can change a complaining habit by acting in a way that is contrary to the complaining that we're involved in. You know, Mark Twain was the one who said, everybody complains about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. Now, I'll tell you this, you can change your attitude. First of all, you can recognize that it is God who gives us our weather. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we have to have rain or things won't grow, and we have to have sunshine. And God does a pretty good job, because we look out and for the most part, He keeps a lot more plants alive than I keep alive in my house. And God provides a balance. And when it is dry for a spell and we begin to complain bitterly, or when it's rainy for a spell and we begin to complain bitterly, we are simply saying to God, "God, you're not doing a very good job." And I can be thankful. And I can take the posture of prayer, and I can pray to God, and I can vocalize my gratitude to Him, and that will change the way I think. And that will change a complaining attitude. I had a friend years ago who talked about how horrible it was when he was first in New York City, and every day he got to work and he was mad because of all the people on the subway and the way they elbowed each other and fought and scrambled to get on the subway, until he decided to make a change. And he said he decided to be as courteous as he possibly could. And he just made a game out of it. And when somebody would push him from behind, he would just step aside and said, "Sir, would you like to go ahead of me?" And people were just dumbfounded. And he began to be courteous to people. And he said that changed his whole attitude. If people wanted to be pushy, let them be pushy. He would not respond in like kind. I remember years ago when I was a boy, there was a slogan in Texas. They were trying to help people drive better and not be angry drivers. And so they had this little slogan, and it was on bumper stickers, and it said, "Drive friendly." You know, you can change your action. And if you get up in the morning and you complain about the way all the idiots drive out there on the roads of Springfield, you can change things by determining that you're going to look for opportunities to be courteous. And you're going to let people in. And you're going to drive more slowly and not ride someone's bumper. And if someone makes a mistake, you're going to just wave and say, "That's okay, buddy." You can change a complaining attitude by the way you act in all of these areas. This morning I talked with Ricky Dean. And he said that whenever he first went to work at Walmart, there were people who didn't treat him very well and were ugly to him. And Elvis Denny said, "Well, Ricky, you pray for him." And he said he started praying for those people. And he said, "You know," he said, "those people that were once my enemies are now my best friends at work." When you change your actions, your attitude will follow. You know, I'm grateful that when Jesus commands us to love our enemies, He knows what's going to happen when we do that. It will change the way we feel about our enemies. It is the obedient action that turns the attitude in the direction that it should be going. So, if you've got a bad attitude and if you're complaining about someone, stop complaining about them and start praying for them. If you have a bad attitude and you're complaining about your job and your work, then just remember that that is a gift from God. A lot of people don't have jobs today. And it is really God that you're serving. And go to work for God tomorrow and see if that doesn't change your attitude. If you've got a bad attitude about some situation, do what Jesus would do. Take on His mind. Well, back to Philippians, where we started. Paul doesn't give us much wiggle room here when he writes these words. Do everything without complaining or arguing. And this is why. So that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault, in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shine like stars in the universe. I tell you, we live in a world that is a bad world. We can complain about it, or we can shine in it. And Paul says you ought to shine in it. If people act in ways that are less than desirable, we can respond in a Christ-like way, and nobody will see your relationship to Christ any more clearly than in a life that is lived out in service without complaint in this world that we live in. So let me just close by challenging all of us, and I'm challenging myself as much as any in this. Let's see how long we can go in this new week without complaining. And those of you that have Christian friends that can hold you accountable, or perhaps a mate, ask someone to maybe notice this. It's hard because it's habitual and we don't even realize we're doing it. And so I'm going to ask Vicki to remind me. If she catches me complaining, she'll probably do it on the way home tonight. It's hard to break old habits. But I want to be the kind of person that someone can look at me and say, you know, you never hear Joe complain. Boy, what a compliment. If you're here tonight and you need prayer, or if there's anything we can do to assist you or encourage you in your obedience to the gospel, we want to do that right now while we stand and while we sing.
That are higher, things that are nobler, these have allured my sight. I will hasten to him, hasten so glad and free. Jesus, greatest, highest, I will come to thee. I am resolved to go to the Savior, leaving my sin and strife. He is the true one, he is the just one, he hath the words of life. I will hasten to him, hasten so glad and free. Jesus, greatest, highest, I will come to thee. I am resolved to enter the kingdom, leaving the paths of sin. Friends may oppose me, foes may beset me, still will I enter in. I will hasten to him, hasten so glad and free. Jesus, greatest, highest, I will come to thee.
Be seated, please.